This is Rabbi Julia Andelman, Director of Community Engagement at JTS, with a commentary for Yom Kippur. When I used to serve as a congregational rabbi, my practice was to offer a sermon on Yom Kippur morning, falling under the general rubric of social justice. I would raise an issue of ethical concern in the world, share my reading of what Jewish texts and tradition had to say on the matter, and suggest action items for individuals and the community. Most of these sermons were well-received, but for some members of my community, they did not sit well. Issues tinged with political valences and moral controversies were not appropriate for Yom Kippur, these people argued. A Yom Kippur sermon should uplift and inspire, not raise uncomfortable socio-political topics about which congregants might disagree with each other and with me, and offer a rabbinic perspective as to how Jewish tradition might guide us in relation to that issue. That was simply not what they came to synagogue to hear on Yom Kippur. So what led me to this practice, and why did I remain committed to it? Because I'm convinced that this is what the liturgy and readings of Yom Kippur want of us. The Haftarah, or prophetic reading, for Yom Kippur morning comes from Isaiah, and much of it serves as an exhortation not to divorce ritual behavior from social and moral considerations. The Haftarah stands in sharp contrast to the Torah reading, which is focused almost exclusively on ritual behavior, specifically the cultic worship of Yom Kippur in temple times. A significant portion of the Musaf service is similarly devoted to retelling the story of this cultic worship in extended poetic terms. In between the two comes the Haftarah. The rabbis generally chose Haftarot that were thematically related to the Torah reading. But the Yom Kippur Haftarah, surprisingly, comes close to negating virtually the entire content of the Torah reading, along with a key part of the Musaf service, declaring ritual to be, more often than not, meaningless in the eyes of God. The Kol HaNishama Machzor renders the Haftarah beautifully in English as follows. Like a people righteous in their deeds, who have not left behind the justice of their God, they ask of me the laws of righteousness. They yearn for nearness to their God. Why, when we fasted, did you not see it? Our souls we have afflicted, do you not know? Behold, while you are fasting, you engage in business, and your workers you continue to oppress. Behold, you fast in strife and quarreling, and with a meanly clenched fist you strike. Today you do not fast in such a way as to make your voice heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I delight in, a fast merely to deprive one's body? Is it bowing the head like the willows or reclining in sackcloth and ash? Do you call that a fast, a day in which the Holy One delights? Is not the fast that I desire the unlocking of the chains of wickedness, the loosening of exploitation, the freeing of all those oppressed, the breaking of the yoke of servitude? Is it not the sharing of your bread with those who starve, the bringing of the wretched poor into your house, or clothing someone you see who is naked and not hiding from your kin in their need? Then your righteousness will travel before you, and the glory of the Almighty will encompass you. Then will you call, and the Eternal One will answer. You will cry out, and God will respond, "Here I am." If you banish oppression from your midst, the menacing hand and tainted speech, if you give of yourself to the hungry, fulfilling the needs of the poor, then shall your light shine in darkness, and your darkness shall be like the noon. The Righteous One will guide you always, will satisfy your thirst in desert wastes, will give your bones new life, and you'll be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters do not fail. And those among you will rebuild ancient ruins, foundations long dormant you'll restore. You shall be called the repairer of bridges, the restorer of settlement roads. This Haftarah is a sharp indictment of the notion that ritual practice and moral behavior can exist in separate realms. We must not enter Yom Kippur under the assumption that fasting and prayer alone can bring about atonement for our sins, Isaiah contends. If we spend the day fervently engaged in ritual activities and then return to our lives as if nothing has changed, as if spiritual self-reflection has nothing to do with how we conduct ourselves in the world, then we have missed the point entirely. Going through the motions of Yom Kippur with a sense of complacency about the problems of the world around us is, according to Isaiah, a fundamentally un-Jewish way of relating to God. Isaiah's thoughts build off of earlier prophetic books, such as Amos, who puts even stronger words in God's mouth. I loathe, I spurn your festivals. I am not appeased by your solemn assemblies. If you offer me burnt offerings or your meal offerings, I will not accept. I will pay no heed to your gifts of fatlings. Spare me the sound of your hymns, and let me not hear the sound of your lutes. But let justice well up like water, righteousness like an unfailing stream. Reflecting on the core of these prophetic teachings, Abraham Joshua Heschel wrote, Amos and the prophets who followed him not only stressed the primacy of morality over sacrifice, but even proclaimed that the worth of worship, far from being absolute, is contingent upon moral living, and that when immorality prevails, worship is detestable. Questioning man's right to worship through offerings and songs, they maintained that the primary way of serving God is through love, justice, and righteousness. Of course, the prophets did not condemn the practice of sacrifice in itself. They did, however, claim that deeds of injustice vitiate both sacrifice and prayer. Men may not drown the cries of the oppressed with the noise of hymns, nor buy off the Lord with increased offerings. The prophets disparaged the cult when it became a substitute for righteousness. In other words, there's simply no way to honestly define Yom Kippur as relating purely to our personal spiritual development. God demands more of us. To avoid reflecting on our actions in the realms of social action and social justice on Yom Kippur would be to fly in the face of what our prophets and the rabbis who highlighted their texts are trying to teach us. While we may prefer to engage with liturgy, biblical readings, and sermons that speak only in terms of our own lives, it behooves us on this most sacred day of the Jewish year to resist that self-centered temptation and to be reminded of our broader obligations to others in need. The Yom Kippur liturgy echoes the prophetic exhortation. We are called to task through the Al Chet confession, or vidui. It is so easy to quickly mumble our way through the long litany of abstract transgressions recited so many times over the course of the day. But if we listen to the charges of that confession, we will hear the text reminding us of our obligations to repair the brokenness of the world. For the sin that we have committed before you by hardening our hearts, ignoring poverty, homelessness, and despair. For the sin that we have committed before you by exploitation, living well while those who serve us live in poverty. For the sin that we have committed before you by causeless hatred, demonizing the other. For the sin that we have committed before you with words of incitement, provoking instead of problem solving, fueling tensions instead of nurturing reconciliation. For the sin that we have committed before you by silence, saying nothing when we knew that human beings were being mistreated. For the sin that we have committed before you by narrow-mindedness, feeling only our own pain, closing our eyes to the agony of the bereaved and oppressed. The Yom Kippur Amidah, or silent meditation, ends with a personal prayer that is, on the surface, quite self-deprecating. My God, before I was created, I was unworthy, and now that I have been created, it is as if I had never been created. In his commentary on the liturgy, Olat Re'iyah, Rabbi Abraham Isaac Cook transforms this seemingly downcast text into a redemptive and inspiring call, in keeping with the sentiments of the prophets urging us to act to improve the world. He interprets the line as follows. Before I was created, during that whole limitless time until I was created, there was undoubtedly nothing in the world which had need of me. Because if I were what was missing for some purpose and completion, I would have been created. Since I wasn't created at that time, it is a sign that I wasn't yet needed then. There was no need of me until such time as I was created, because the hour has arrived in which I need to fulfill something for the completion of existence. Were I to direct my actions to the purpose of my creation, I would now be worthy. But because my actions are not directed towards that purpose, I have not arrived at the purpose of my creation, and I am as unworthy now as I was then. Our task on Yom Kippur, then, is for each one of us to try to discern what the world needs us for, and to remind ourselves of the obligation to rise to the challenge of fulfilling that task. From the global to the local, the world around us is full of causes crying out for our attention. Where each of us sees a need that we can respond to, a problem that we can help alleviate, suffering that we can lessen in some way, Yom Kippur is the day to identify it and to commit, amidst all of our family and work and personal obligations, to doing something to help. We must not allow ourselves to be satisfied with merely showing up to services, fasting, singing, beating our chests, sitting, standing, bowing, and passing the hours as we move through the pages of the Machzor. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avot famously states, Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor, velo ata ben chorin lihibatel mimena. None of us can solve the problems of the world on our own, but we can never stop doing our part to try. We invoke the image of God as judge so many times on the High Holidays, but rather than imagining God as one who sentences each of us to either life or death in the coming year, we should instead understand this to mean that God notices and evaluates our actions and holds us to the highest of standards. May we hear and heed Isaiah's challenge never to let our religious lives and communities shield us from the complex responsibilities of repairing the brokenness around us, but rather to let our Judaism guide each of us as it was designed to do towards a path of building a better world for the Jewish community and for all of God's creatures.